Chapter 10. In Portlandcia, we were far removed from the intrigues of the court. But when we learned of Prince Darren's treachery and subsequent imprisonment, no one could speak of anything else. This continued for a whole week, too, until at last the gossip dwindled and people's concerns were once again centered on everyday issues. I had never been one for spreading hearsay, and was most glad when life in town returned to normal, or so it seemed. Shortly after the king's coronation, new troops arrived to replace the garrison. This at first did not concern me. In the past, guard rotation had occurred every few years, but I soon discovered these were not like any I had ever encountered. These were ugly brutes, with missing teeth and cauliflower ears, who enjoyed showing off their scars to one another and extorting coins from little children in the streets. They roamed in squads, terrorizing the populace. Each day, the number of people on crutches increased. Their favorite ploy was to approach some unsuspecting citizen and, without any provocation, state,
"I don't like the way you look,"
then poke him or her in the eyes. Things went from bad to worse when the king's chief administrator, the Duke of Cunningham, arrived to collect the new tax that had been imposed. At first, there was strong opposition to it by the mayor and the town's elders. The duke took their objections under advisement. He seemed, for a while, a reasonable man. But soon afterwards, new gallows were built in the main square. The mayor was asked to dedicate it and quickly found it his final campaign platform. The next day, the town's elders, despite their years of experience and accumulated wisdom, ceased their aging at the end of a rope. And during all this time, the one question on my mind was, why is the king doing these hateful things? Why? The sun, a fiery crimson orb, was touching the horizon, bidding the land farewell till its resurgence on the morrow, when Darren emerged onto the balcony of the king's apartment, carrying the royal house cat in his arms. He eyed the scene before him with a deep sense of peace, though he could still hear the drunken revelry of his guards here and there. "All's well," thought the king, and a contented smile stretched across his face. It was such a shame his mother had died on the spot. She would have been amazed at the changes he was making. Well, perhaps not amazed, he admitted to himself. Actually, she would have hated everyone. His mother had always seen things as right and wrong, while he had always seen them as right and not quite right. But she was packed away in a crate in the North Tower where no one ever went, and, as far as everyone else was concerned, off on an extended holiday to the baths at Tapwater. No one but Cower had ever questioned her sudden disappearance, and he was certain no one would, at least not until the summer heat when she began to stink. "So much to do, so much to do," he mused, stroking the cat vigorously. He would see Brian's name live forever in the hearts and minds of the people, even if he had to brand it there himself. Brian. The name had always appealed to him more than his own, and now that it was his, he felt at last a complete person. How strange, he thought, for something so basic to have such influence. Where once he was a slave to his passions and emotions, he was empowered now, and decisive too, all because of a name. And yet, as much as this pleased him, there were moments when he missed being Darren and missed the pranks he used to play. The inflated pig's bladder under a seat cushion. Raising the drawbridge during a religious procession. Spiking high tea. Tricks such as these only made life more flavorable. Oh, impersonating Bryant was such a bore at times. Every day the same routine, smile and be pleasant, wave to the crowd. His hand came up filled with fur, and he peered at the cat lying still in his arms, noting how good-natured it had become since he had sent it off to be stuffed. A pensive look came over his face. There were some people he'd like to stuff as well, starting with the council. First, there was King Blunderon. By the gods, he was inept. Then there was King Fallacious with all his deceptions, and King Midishmere with all his complaints.
But worse of all was King Jasper and his stony looks. The man was already a complication. After two or three heated discussions, they had dropped all pretense at liking each other. If he were anyone other than Mian's father, he would have gone to the chopping block weeks ago. But enough of this, thought the king with a flouncing gesture that made the cat's head bob up and down. He was not going to allow anything to spoil his evening. The Duke of Cunningham had returned from Portlandia and Nightshade from the Northern Shires, and they had brought with them the first installment of the new tax. He had ordered a feast prepared in their honour with all the finest foods and wines from his larder. Entertainers had been summoned from every corner of the land. Jugglers, jesters, minstrels, even an exotic dancer named Lulu. It was guaranteed to be a spectacle, and the finest the court had ever seen. Filled with a deep sense of satisfaction, Darren cast one last look at the setting sun. He returned inside, tossing the cat onto his bed, then strolled to the full-length mirror next to the fireplace. He enjoyed gazing at himself these days, even if his looks were not his own, for each time he thought of his brother now, it was in the way he had seen him last, with grime on his face and bugs in his hair, and straw sticking out of his ears. The fire on the hearth reflected in his eyes and cast a faint orange glow across his face. Everything about him was kingly, his robe, his tunic, his jeweled belt and sword. Even his bloomers bore the royal seal. "You certainly cut a dashing figure," he thought, well pleased. "No wonder the single women of the court are always flirting with you." He thought of Lady Fascinati, who was most beguiling. Lady Barbella, who was particularly healthy. And he could not forget Lady, who, despite her parents' lack of imagination, could never be accused of lacking one herself. But none of them captivated him like Mian. The gleam in his eyes faded, and the countenance staring back at him in the mirror wore a lean and hungry look. For Mian continued to resist his advances, despite the proximity of their marriage. This stubbornness on her part was driving him to distraction. Since his garden indiscretion, she had been as unmoved by his growing need as was a promontory in the face of a flood. He would respect her wishes and wait until the wedding. Oh, but afterwards, he shut his eyes and indulged in her loveliness. Before it swept him away, he inhaled deeply, for he did not want to appear in public with his cheeks flushed and his desire apparent. "Your Grace," came a timorous voice. Darren scowled and turned toward the door, where Cower stood. "I thought I told you not to disturb me." "Your Grace left instructions to be informed the moment the Duke of Cunningham and the Earl of Nightshade had arrived."
"When did I tell you that?"
"Just before you told me not to disturb you, Your Grace."
"Aha! And by telling you not to disturb me, I countermanded my previous command. Therefore, you have deliberately disobeyed me."
Darren chuckled inside. Tormenting Cower was such fun.
"Now help me on with my ceremonial cape while I determine how best to punish you."
"Aye, Your Grace,"
droned Cower, removing the cape from the royal wardrobe.
"Whatever you deem shall be fitting."
He pictured his body stretched across a rack, manacles biting into his flesh, pain streaking throughout his body.
"Perhaps it's for the best," thought the retainer, sighing as he joined the king at the mirror.
The past few months had been exhausting, always walking on eggshells, barely daring to breathe lest the king berate him for some minor offense.
"Well," said Darren, growing tired of waiting.
Cower snapped to attention and gazed at the king in the mirror.
"Aye, Your Grace."
"The cape, man. Put on my cape."
Cower realized it was still in his hands.
"Of course, Your Grace."
He spread it across the king's shoulders, then smoothed out a few wrinkles. Up until recently, he had been treated like a member of the family, respected, even loved. Yet suddenly, everything he did, everything he said, displeased the king, and for this he knew not why. He gazed at himself in the mirror and was saddened by what he saw. Once he had been a vital specimen, healthy and full of zeal. Now an old man with sunken eyes and hollow cheeks stared back at him. Oh, such torture, such pain, and for no apparent reason.
"I beg your pardon, Your Grace,"
ventured the retainer,
"but are you feeling well?"
"What? Of course I'm feeling well, replied the king irritably. However, being one who never trusted his good health, Darren immediately thought the retainer had observed something new about his pallor. Why, asked Darren, studying his reflection, do I look sick to you?
No, 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 your grace looks very well indeed. As handsome as ever. It's just that, I'd swear, these past few months you've had something troublesome on your mind.
A muscle in Darren's cheek began to twitch. Really? I think I've handled things quite well thus far. Perhaps you would explain to me just what you mean. He could feel Kaur's hesitation. Go on, we are old friends. You can tell me the truth as you see it. Encouraged, the retainer did just that.
I sense a tenseness about you. Like a string that has been pulled too tight. You hide it well, your grace, but it is there all the same.
Darren eyed Kaur in the mirror. Too tight, you say?
I've never seen you like this, not in all the time I have cared for you.
I have never been a king till now. The responsibility can be overwhelming. The challenges can be great. He had heard this before. 3 times, in fact, when the king had banished his best friends from the court. Kaur thought back to what Dillon Torkelstone had said. I sense something wrong here. I know not what it is, but in time it will come to me. And when it does, I will return. His other friends, Masters Pepperell and Willowbrook, had not been as diplomatic, especially Niles.
I don't care if you are king, you're being an ass. If you want to make something of that, I'll be at home, where the air is not so thick with ego.
Kaur realized the king was waiting for more of a response.
No, my lord, it goes deeper than that.
How so?
It is like you are no longer yourself.
Sensing the very same tension building in the king that was the subject of their present conversation, Kaur thought it wise to lighten the mood and gave out with a short, tentative laugh.
I swear, if I did not know you better, I might think you had changed places with your brother.
At the very least, he had hoped to evoke a grin, a nod, a glimmer of the camaraderie they once had shared. Instead, he received a look so manifest with scorn, he fell back from the king at once.
I beg your pardon, your grace. Please forgive me. It was a jest, a very poor jest. How could I have said something so foolish?
Yet deep down to Kaur, there was nothing foolish about his remark. Something had changed in the king, and only just recently, after the joust, since the attempt on his life. And this inspired a thought so outlandish it rocked him to his core. What if the man standing in front of the mirror was, in fact, Darren? What if he had taken his brother's place on the night of the stabbing? You've guessed, haven't you? Said the king evenly. He turned and faced the retainer. Haven't you? The calmness Darren exuded only intensified Kaur's terror.
My lord, I...
But nothing more would come out, so thrown and shocked was he. I should have known I couldn't fool you for long. Well, now you've gone and done it. Now you've sealed your fate. At last, Kaur found his voice.
But your grace... All my years of faithful service
will be taken into consideration when choosing the method of your execution. Darren walked to the door, opened it, and beckoned to the guards in the hall. He faced Kaur and said, Would you mind going with these gentlemen? They'll show you to your cell. Kaur stumbled to them, shaking at the same time, numb from head to toe. He gazed at them in disbelief, then at the man who pretended to be their king.
How can you do this?
Darren shrugged.
I don't know. It just comes naturally, I suppose.
He addressed the officer in charge of the detail. Alert Cleave the executioner, will you? Tell him I've a job for him tonight. Nothing flashy, no spectators, not even the professional mourners. He gazed at Kaur, who was trembling fiercely. We've come a long way together, I know, but now the time has come for us to part, me from you and you from your head. And with this said, the king slammed the door shut.
Look, mistress, said Jonna,
Mian's lady-in-waiting. In her hands was a package wrapped in crinkled parchment.
A present has arrived for you.
Is it from my lord? Cried Mian excitedly, hurrying to her. Is it from the king?
No, The Weaver's Guild, my lady. Local 3. Oh, let me undo it, please. I love presents.
Mian tore away the wrapping and found a beautiful kirtle of heather-coloured wool.
Oh, is it not exquisite? So luxurious to the touch. I will wear it tonight. Quickly, help me put it on.
She removed her lounging robe and slipped the dress over her head.
What do you think? Asked the princess, smoothing her hair.
Jana eyed her appraisingly.
I don't think it's quite right for your skin colouring. You're more a winter person.
Really? Said Mian, surprised.
Perhaps if you dressed it up a bit and wore your gold armbands.
The pair with rubies or with pearls?
Oh, the pearls. By all means.
It was then Mian's father, King Jasper, first ruler under Brian, then council majority leader, entered the room, paying the girl's protests no heed.
Are you not ready yet, lass?
Scowled Jasper, slapping his gauntlets against his thigh. He was a stout man, made stouter by the gambeson and chainmail he wore beneath his tunic. His eyes were hazel, and his bushy blonde hair was as coarse as straw. Between a bulbous nose and a thick upper lip, he sported a woolly moustache that stretched to his jawline and accented an anvil-like chin.
You women astound me. You've a corset and a dress to don. If you had to wear the layers I carry round, we'd ne'er see ya any time at all.
Hush, said Mian, ignoring him. Jonna slipped the wide gold bands onto her arms. I'm almost ready. Don't you want me to look my best for the king and his advisers?
Ugh,
scoffed Jasper, with a wave of his hand.
Now there's three stooges for ya.
Father, chided the princess mildly, I'll not have you mock my betrothed that way. King Jasper had a mind of his own. If he had an opinion, he was going to state it.
If a man insists on acting like a fool, he should be prepared for others to mock him.
Father, said Mian more sternly,
never have I seen a nobleman so lacking in noble spirit. Noble heirs he has plenty of, that I'll say for him. He makes a grand show of things with his banquets and entertainments, but underneath it all there's no humility, not an ounce. He's quite easily the most vacuous man I've ever met.
Enough! She whirled on him, her eyes ablaze. He is your king and overlord.
She paused intentionally and gave Jonna a look which the handmaiden knew instantly was meant for her to leave the room. When they were alone, Mian continued purposefully, and as your king and overlord, he deserves your respect no less than your loyalty. This way in which you speak of him is beneath you, and dangerously close to treason.
Let him kill me, then, answered Jasper bluntly. Better that than to stand by and watch him ruin the kingdom. In but a few months' time, he's brought the economy to near collapse.
I'll not listen to this, said Mian, striding past him.
You will, said the man, grabbing her arm. We live in an ordered society, lass. Soon he'll have tortured or killed every decent, hard-working peasant in the country. Scores of fiefs have shut down for lack of labourers. Scores more have been confiscated by those hoodlums he calls guards.
This country has never known such wealth and prosperity, retorted Mian, pulling away. While you were content to war against your own people, he aspired to unite them all.
That was his father's dream, you may recall, one which I helped to build. And now the son does all he can to undermine his father's efforts.
He saw the tears well in her eyes, and his heart wrenched in his chest.
Mian, darling, I know my words are hateful to you, but can you not see what he's become? I tell you, he's a madman, worse than his brother ever was. And were that not disastrous enough, he's allied himself with two of the lowest scoundrels I have e'er had the cursed luck to acquaint.
Cunningham is a gentleman, protested the princess, her lower lip beginning to tremble.
Cunningham is a villain, a demon. Why, the man's had designs to rule long before Brian descended the throne. Everything he does is a calculated effort to steal power from the king and freedom from the people. And Nightshade, the poor misguided fool, will say anything, do anything, that Cunningham tells him.
You spout treason as easily as you would order a gooseberry pie.
Not so,
denied Jasper.
I've ne'er cared for gooseberry pie.
She stared at him in disbelief. Could I have been so wrong about you? Has the man I've worshipped all these years been nothing more than a traitor?
Jasper stepped back, wounded, and he cast his gaze to the floor.
You must search your heart for the answer to that one, lass. My love for you is as strong today as it was when they first brought you to me in a swaddling cloth. And my love for my country is as steadfast as the day I swore allegiance to Odonot. But on that same day, I also swore to protect the Commonwealth from its enemies, those within as well as those without. And from that purpose, I will never sway.
Mian shook her head regretfully. Everything you stand for is a threat to the man I love. I cannot honor you and honor him as well. He looked at her, the seat of his loins, the issue of the woman he loved, and with sadness filling his heart, he said,
"Then this is quite a pickle."
He strode to the door, but stopped and turned back to her.
"You must make your own choice, Mian. You are of age now and can marry whomsoever you please, but I'll not stay here another day. I leave tonight for home, and I'm taking your mother with me. And your sister, poor blind Ella. I've never seen someone so broken-hearted. She can hardly see straight."
Mian nodded. "Yes, I know."
"You're welcome to join us if you want. 'Tis your decision."
She lowered her gaze. "My place is here." She watched him leave the room, wanting to call him back, but she could not find the words. At length she turned to her lady-in-waiting, her dearest friend and confidant.
"Oh, Jonna," said Mian, distraught. "Dear Jonna, I am so confused. Please tell me. Tell me exactly what you would do."
And after studying her a moment, Jonna nodded her head and said,
"I would definitely wear the pears."